power of humility. Very big topic. Humility is really very difficult to approach, because humility means that we just totally forego our personal desires, and we totally dedicate ourselves as an instrument to the desires of the Supreme Lord. And that is humility. And there is no better definition, actually, than that. Because in that spirit, one can change moods. You see, in Srila Prabhupada, sometimes, well, we see him seated on his Vyasasana in Vrindavan with two lions carved. I mean, serious lions carved next to him. And yet he looks more like a lion than those lions, with his very strong eyes that just see right through anyone. And one might just, a newcomer might just think, is that humility? Then we see Srila Prabhupada in the state of Gujarat, where the local king offered him a huge silver throne, a very big silver throne. And we see Srila Prabhupada seated on that throne, just his head slightly tilted, his face, his eyes looking down, with an expression on his face that says, at least to me, it says, I know it's a monster of a throne, and I'm sitting on it. I know. I mean, how can a human being sit on such a throne? I know. But I must do it, because it's my duty. Because I am the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And on his behalf, I'm sitting here, not for myself. So please, forgive me. And there, on that throne, to me that picture is an emblem of humility. It's one of my favorite pictures of Srila Prabhupada, because it's just incredible. On the one hand, that excessive opulence, and on the other hand, his attitude of being like, so totally unaffected, so clearly totally unaffected, so very much not touched by it at all. Not indulging, not enjoying it, just basically just doing it out of duty. We see that all the worship, it didn't impress him at all. It didn't. All the offerings. And here, ladies and gentlemen, we take you on a tour of the temple in Bombay, which was constructed at the time of Srila Prabhupada, and we'll take you upstairs to his quarters. Pretty nice, isn't it? And yes, you can see here at the top of the floor, you can see how there were these two towers and how Srila Prabhupada's quarters take the entire floor, and very opulent, very opulent. Was he enjoying such opulence? Well, actually, he stayed there only two nights. That was it. So, they call it his quarters, but actually only two nights he spent there. It was an offering of devotion, which he accepted. But, in Mayapur, when he came to Mayapur, he said, that straw hut, For those who have been to Mayapur, they know there is a straw hut which is just near the main gate. And that was the original residence there. That's where Prabhupada stayed. And that was his favorite place, actually. And there was a hand pump for water. He said, "Oh, this is actually the way to live." He said, this is so nice. There he stayed much longer, actually, in that simple dwelling. And he really liked that. Because he had no other interest than the interest of Krishna. This is actually the spirit of surrender to Krishna. To have no other interests. In that way one can purchase Krishna. In that way one can just purchase Krishna to an extent that Krishna will do anything the devotee wants. But the devotee only wants to do what Krishna wants. And so, they have this very deep, loving relationship where each are trying the most to please the other. And to have that relationship with Krishna, that is extraordinary. At that time, it's not that Krishna is distant. For us, sometimes, we may even have moments, does Krishna actually exist? Or even if he exists, does he hear me? You know? Or does he care about me? It says that Krishna, his devotee will never perish. Name bhaktipanashyati. My devotee will never perish, Krishna says. But am I a devotee? Does he accept me as a devotee? With my shortcomings? Does he? Sometimes we may think like that. But when one is truly the instrument of Krishna, there is no question, there is an intimate relationship. So humility is completely dependent on Krishna. There is no humility independent of Krishna. Even if there is something apparently humility. There may be in the world some people who are not taking a lot of glory for themselves, who are not jumping in the limelight to get the attention. They appear to be humble. Not necessarily. Maybe they're afraid to step in the limelight. Are they free from personal agenda? Are they free from personal desire? Or do they only have that desire to be the instrument of Krishna? That is the point. And that is the power of humility. That it purchases Krishna, that it attracts Krishna, and then anything becomes possible because he is the all-powerful, unlimited Supreme Lord, and he can make everything possible. All our limitations, boy, do we have many limitations. We encounter them thousands of times a day, and it's frustrating. Human existence is frustrating. And the reason is that we can think of much greater things that could be done than we can ever do. And that's terribly frustrating. Everybody can dream. We can dream. Human beings can dream like anything. Of course, I have seen that animals also dream. My parents used to have a dog, and that dog dreamt a lot. And you could see, he was going through something, you know. And he's sleeping. Whole things. So I studied that, and I came to the conclusion, animals definitely dream. They dream. And probably the same as we do. A bigger, better life. You know, a big bone, or I don't know what he'd dream. I'm not sure what a dog would dream about. I cannot. But, and also fear was there, anxiety, whatever. But our dreams, our hopes to achieve so many things, it's bigger than we can ever reach. So, like, therefore, life is frustrating. Wow. But for the pure devotee, it is totally different. Wow. Because he sees nothing happens by chance. See, we always think the odds, those odds again, they are always against me. It's just destiny. Just when everything seemed to really look good and everything seemed to look favorable, then the odds just turned and the whole card house just collapsed, and there it was, you know. Somehow or other, destiny. Destiny is so tough to accept because it sometimes just throws everything out, just as you have all your plans and everything is in order and it's all arranged, and then destiny kicks in. Gosh, and then everything just spoiled. Huh? How is it possible? Why me? It's not fair. Why is this happening to me? I mean, really, it seems to always happen to me. I mean, it's not fair. Huh? And other people, yeah, they have so much luck and good fortune. And me, you know, it's so frustrating. Oh, too frustrating. Huh? But not the pure devotee. Not the humble one, because the pure devotee sees everything as perfect. Krishna. Krishna is, has kindly sent me all these things for my purification. Krishna has a greater plan. Ah, yes, I have my plan, but what are my plans? They're insignificant. Krishna is unlimitedly intelligent and has an unlimited vision. Then, how can I question Krishna? Therefore, the fact that my foolish plan has just collapsed, very good. And let Krishna's plan prevail. Of course, it's better. In this way, even internally, the pure devotee who is deeply humble is not battling with destiny. Like, a battle with destiny means pride. Means I want to control this life and just arrange the circumstances my way. In this house, everything is going according to Krishna's way. Not my way. It's Krishna's way anyway. So, this spirit of embracing whatever Krishna sends. See, we just have observed the Ramayana. And when Lord Ramachandra was banned to the forest, Kaikeyi was just ruthlessly sending him off, and Ramachandra basically said that, this is very good. This is good. Because when I go to the forest, I have a lot of opportunity to cultivate knowledge. First of all, I will have time, and I will live a very simple, renounced life. I don't have to deal with palace affair. And second of all, I can meet many great sages in the forest. Therefore, this is actually a blessing. So he was, and everyone else was thinking it's a disaster. I mean, everyone thought it was a disaster, except for Lord Ramachandra, who said, that's actually a blessing. Lakshman was angry. But Lord Ramachandra, no, this is a blessing. So, in this way, we see demonstrations of humility. Rupa and Sanatana, they came
before Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Rupa and Sanatan were ministers in the Mohammedan government. So that was a bit embarrassing because they were Brahmins by birth from a Sarasvat Brahmin family, which was a very respectable Brahmin family. But when they were young students, they were excelling. Now, it was a custom amongst Muslim rulers in India to appoint Hindu ministers because Muslim ministers sometimes killed their king and declared themselves king, so they therefore had all Hindu ministers. So when these young Hindu students were excelling in their studies, the Nawab was informed, and the Nawab, he made them an offer they could not refuse. Basically, he told them that you will have to become my personal ministers. He said, oh no, we cannot do that. Then the Nawab said, if you will not take this position, then I will kill the entire Brahminical community in Bengal. Kill all the Brahmins. That, how could they refuse that? So they took up the position in the Mohammedan government, really against their will. They were forced in a brutal way, and they did it. And then, all right, once they did it, then they took on that service. But then at one point, Rupa Goswami, he managed to retire. And yes, his elder brother, Sanatan, he also would have liked to retire, but the Nawab said, no, you must stay. He was very intelligent. But then one day, Sanatan no longer came to work. He's the minister, he didn't go to the court. So the Nawab, and he reported sick. So, you know, the Nawab sent the court physician to check him out, and the court physician said, there's nothing wrong with the man, he's perfectly fine. And so then, you know, it was a drama. Then the Nawab came. And the Nawab, he had Sanatan Goswami jailed for that. Anyway, this is a little bit of history, and the point is that just before that incident, that the confrontation with the Nawab, and before he was jailed, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Ramakeli, the place where Rupa and Sanatan were staying. And at that time, he actually gave them these names, Rupa and Sanatan. Their names were, they had Muslim names, Dabir Kas and Shakar Malik. But for Rupa, Dabir Kas, Shakar Malik, Sanatan. And then the two brothers, they went before Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And they said, we are the most fallen. And that's easy to say. I am the most fallen. I'm so fallen. No, they said, we are the most fallen. We are more fallen than Jagai and Madai. Now, Jagai and Madai had a big reputation at that time because Jagai and Madai, they were Brahmin boys who had become completely degraded. They were drinking, smoking, killing, setting houses on fire, prostitution, you name it. Every sin in the book they committed. Everything. So Rupa and Sanatan said, we are more fallen than Jagai and Madai. So how could they speak like that? And then they said, yes, we are more fallen than Jagai and Madai because, and they gave reasons, because we are protecting many Jagais and Madais. We are ministers and of a kingdom of Jagai and Madais. Huh? A whole kingdom. Muslims who are not following any standards, who are killing, who are taking the flesh of the cow, who are taking all kinds of abominable things. We are protecting them. Due to our protection as ministers, they're able to do these things. Therefore, we are protecting millions of Jagais and Madais. Therefore, we are million times more sinful than Jagai and Madai. And therefore, we are the most fallen. Please, bestow your mercy upon us. And then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu basically said, please, please stop your humility. Stop it. It's too much. Cannot take this. You are my devotees for a long time. And he embraced them and then gave them these names, Rupa and Sanat. So these are the principal teachers in our line. Actually, after Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, Rupa and Sanatan, they are the principal teachers in our movement. And they teach humility, like in the foreground. That is their outstanding quality. And these are the first and foremost acharyas in our whole lineage after Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, humility is something deeply embedded in this Vaishnava philosophy. Now, how to, for us, how to get there is very difficult. Because we tend to act, in front of the mirror. When I speak tonight in this lecture of the power of humility, how shall I say it? The power, no, that's too forceful. The power, that's a bit too soft. The power, sober maybe? Sober might be good. Serious. I should have a serious look. Maybe the hands slightly folded, and then I'll just say, the power, little pause, of humility. That was not that, was it? I practiced that one. Yeah. I thought that will sort of create the impression that I know what I'm talking about. But the truth is to internally realize this is our biggest challenge. Even in a lifetime, I don't know if I'll ever make it. Because deep down, I can be on my knees, no problem. I can be on my knees longer than you can. Oops, no, that wasn't right. Okay. But I can be on my knees. I can be soft-spoken. I can whisper. So many things. Yes. But true humility is not so easy. Therefore, yeah. Therefore, it begins with bowing down before a Vaishnava, and not many Vaishnavas. Bowing down before a Vaishnava, and with folded hands, say, "How can I serve you?" With some Vaishnavas, you have to be really careful. You know, they take full advantage of that. And it's like our sweet Lokanath Maharaj, in the past months, 1986 was the 500th anniversary of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Maharaj had Padyatra, and Padiyam Trinit, an elephant that would pick up people and throw them around, a camel that would bite, and a whole bunch of bulls with huge horns and so on, and a whole Indian village, you know, of people that were walking. And, you know, an Indian village, these are the kind of the simple people. And Maharaj came to me and he asked me to look if I could please take care of them while they were in my room. And I said, Oh Maharaj, I'm in charge of all the construction in Mayapur. Maharaj, I am so busy. Then Maharaj says to me, in my village, when you want to get something done, you don't go to a man who's not busy. He said, because such a man is lazy, he will not do anything. But if you go to a busy man, he may not have much time, but because he's active, he will do something. What could I say after that? He defeated me. And next moment, you know, I had an elephant that throws people around, a camel that bites, and a whole Indian village. And they would come to my door. Bang, 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 bang. Bali, bang. Oh, gosh. Anytime of the day, anytime of the night, bang, 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 you know. Oh, it was an ordeal. So, are we really going to bow down to the Vaishnavas? It can be dangerous. Huh? It can be hazardous to health. But yes, wholeheartedly yes. Even if they ask us, elephants, camels, villages, whatever, you know. Yes, it is yes, whatever you ask. And gladly, not begrudgingly, no, gladly. Yes. Huh? Yes. Anything you desire. So that courage, right, is great courage. To just give ourselves so selflessly to a Vaishnava. That is actually the beginning of humility. That's where it comes, to become the instrument in the hand of a Vaishnava. Who just like some chapati dough, you know. I'll tell you one more story before I start your questions. It's like, at one point, I was in Vrindavan. This was when I was very new. My first service in Vrindavan was, when I joined, was that they asked me to help in the restaurant. And on the second day, the manager left. And that's when I was appointed the manager. So I became the manager of the restaurant. And then, yeah, it was a little difficult. I had this Bengali chapati cook, and he was like a machine just churning out chapatis. So at one point, there were no more guests. The restaurant was empty, and he was still cooking chapatis. So he said, no, stop. Kept on going. And he kept on going. I told him, no, people, no. Kept on rolling to parties, you know, said, what do I do? So, in the end, I grabbed him by the arm, you know. Then he lifted the tawa, you know, the tawa is the hot plate, and he sort of went after me with the tawa. So I had to temporarily retreat, you know, because that was serious, right? So anyway, but I survived it. And then he complained that I tried to kill him, whereas, you know, I'm in a tower, like, you know, I mean, I was lucky, I got away light. Anyway, I got a whole crowd of angry people, and, you know, so for 2 weeks I kept that cook, and then I fired him with great satisfaction. But then I got a new one, and the new one was an American devotee who was an old devotee, you know, and he became my chapati cook. So one day, he was a little sickly, so sometimes he was sleeping here and there, and often with a deli belly, you know. But anyway, he was a good cook, and he's cooking chapatis. So one day, there was a family of 25 coming in, a group of 25. And, you know, in India, it's
if the people come to a restaurant, they don't ask politely, you know. They bang the cups on the table. Bang, bang, bang. We want water now, you know. So the people, they want it, you know. 25 talis, that means 4 chapatis. That means 100 chapatis. So I call down to the kitchen downstairs, 100 chapatis. 100 chapatis. And I guess in the kitchen something didn't quite compute, because no chapatis came up. So I was running, you know, all these people, the people were banging, we want chapatis. So I went to the room, chapatis, chapatis, chapatis. And then finally, the chapati cook jumped out of the door. And on his finger, he had from chapati dough the head of a joker. And he puts it under my nose. And he said, there are no chapatis, because the chapati cook quits. Well, yeah, I was standing there like, I guess he was teaching me some humility. I guess he was teaching me how to deal with people. I guess. And I was thinking, yes, I should become like dough, you know, in the hands of a Vaishnava. And let him shape me. And serve the devotees. Question number one, does Kali Yuga affect this material world only? Yes. Even in the heavenly planets, they're not affected. It affects only the lower regions. Since in the heavenly planets, it stays Treta Yuga. But even in Treta Yuga, there is disagreement. So even in the heavenly planets, even among the devatas, humility hasn't fully settled in to the point that they can live in harmony. It's not possible. Because only through the power of humility, brothers and sisters, it is only through the power of humility that we can actually live in harmony. There's no other way. So, yes, Kali only in the material world. Is too much humility also an ego? Yeah. Too much. That's exactly, anything too much is too much. Yeah. That's clear. You know, there's something wrong when it's too much. Too much salt. Yeah. Too much sugar. And then your teeth start crunching. Oh, this is too sweet. It's like too much. Sure. But the right... Okay, let me begin with the beginning. Humility begins with honesty. It begins with honesty. Basically, it means that we are not... There's not a masquerade. We are... not pretending. See, in this world, we're always pretending. Everyone, that's just the standard, you know. I'll try and make a good impression, you know. Okay. Different ways, huh? I put a flower in my, you know, in the button of my black suit. Try and make a good impression. But that's not good enough. I was in Spain on an airport, and there is this man, he had a black suit. And we're waiting for the plane. He wears this black suit. And then he saw a spot on his black suit. So what did he do? He licked his fingers, and he just started like rubbing the suit, you know? And then he saw another spot, and he licked that fingers and started rubbing. And he starts sort of washing himself like a cat, you know. And I just look at him. He's smearing saliva all over his suit, you know. Like, I mean, trying to make a good impression. But maybe it didn't quite have all the good qualities. Yeah. A nice black suit stained in saliva. What do you think of that? So, that is, we are all in the same boat, trying to make an impression, trying to present ourselves better than we are. Oh, it's second nature. How to stop it? It's very difficult. It's sort of, you know, you don't even notice it. It's so much become part of us that you don't even know you're doing it. How to stop that? Is it through some mental adjustment? From this day on, I will be humble. On this, mental adjustments are very difficult. It's through a mental adjustment, we'll never get there. But mental adjustment help. Obviously, if I walk around like, you have to understand, is that I'm a Swami. And, you know, and therefore, you know, we are not like ordinary folks, excuse me. And therefore we're sitting on a raised platform. Because a Swami cannot sit on the ground. Oh, no question. No. We must sit raised, you know, that has to be. Even my bed, you know, is 2 meters off the ground. Yeah. No, absolutely. Otherwise, couldn't sleep there. No? Has to be. Okay. Always raised. Yeah, if I would have that kind of attitude, I'm sure that after some time, the tent would be empty. Some people say, well, it's okay, I think we've heard it, you know. Go on. So this is indeed the issue. That's where false ego comes in. That's too much humility. Artificial. We must be honest and natural and be ready to admit where we are. And the more we do, I mean, they say so, the truth sets you free, isn't it? And it does. Pretense is very difficult. If you're a compulsive liar, you always lie to everyone. It's just a habit. You've been lying for so many years, and you know, it's complicated because when you lie, okay, some lies are just the same lies you tell to everyone. Those are easy. But if you tell different lies to different people, then it's very complicated because you have to make sure these people don't meet each other or communicate with each other. It's like you have to watch them, you know. So you have to remember. And then you have to remember which lies you told to who so that, like, you know, they don't meet each other. It's like really, sometimes you have to really go to a far extent to sort of avoid or spoil the meeting, you know, even to knocking over a flower vase or create some drama, you know, like by which they just don't manage to talk to each other. Whoa. Always have to cover your tracks. So, honesty is really what will, that is our solution. It is honesty that sets us free. Honesty. We can begin at the beginning. I guess I'm not perfect. I guess I'm not all powerful. I guess I'm not God. I mean, if you are, then maybe you can stop the rain. That would be good.
It's not much rain, but a bit is there. Water's dripping off the tin now. Don't come in.
So anyway, my point is humility simplifies our life. And gradually honesty simplifies our life. And gradually we realize we are not so great. We are not perfect. We are making mistakes. And in this way, honesty leads to humility. And that's where we really have the right amount of humility. If I'm too humble, then what if someone walks all over me? Lord Shiva, you know the famous picture, when once his wife was getting extremely, extremely enraged, she was beyond control due to some demons who deserved it, but then her anger was not appeased, and even with her husband, she was out of control to a point where she literally walked on him. And you've seen the poster, very famous picture of Lord Shiva lying there and Parvati just walking on him. So, what if they walk over you? Okay. What's the problem? Yes, I'm a doormat. Welcome. That's what it says on the door there. Welcome. Yes. Well, but when they want to walk over Krishna or over Krishna's devotees, then it's another thing. Wait a minute. Then we roar. What are you doing? Stop. Then we are not so soft-spoken. Then we can speak loud. And that is also humility. Because I said the essence is to be the instrument of the devotees and the servant of the devotees. So, therefore, we must thoroughly understand what humility is before we can try to be it. And give up this idea that humility means someone who speaks at a low volume, right? Someone who is sort of, whose hands are glued together with super glue, and you know. That's how you get votes, you know, but that's not real. Real humility is different. It means we do the needful for Krishna. If acceptance of Krishna's plan means humility, how do we learn to accept that plan? By serving. So by accepting devotional service. You know, in devotional service there is some surrender. And little by little, through that service, our capacity to surrender increases. In the beginning, we cannot immediately surrender to anything and everything, but then, with experience, we can surrender more and more. So it's building, you see. Humility is the foundation of our spiritual life. And then we have to build the spiritual life. Spiritual life is not a matter of trying to develop a desire, you know, and I'm trying to get more desire to actually give myself to Krishna. Somehow or other, trying to get the desire. Trying to get in the mood. No. Spiritual life is simply about building, making small sacrifices. Many small sacrifices for Krishna begin to make a big sacrifice. Every day, I don't have deity, you may say. I do, actually, but say someone has no deity, but has a picture of Krishna, and every day they'll just offer a flower and some incense. It's not a big thing. not a big thing, but you do it every day, small thing. Then you can do, maybe change some water on the altar. Can you do? Change the water, buy a stick of incense, put one flower. Is it possible to do? Not too busy? Can be done. I think so. You can manage. So, it's a small thing. Alright, put that in. Put in 1,000 small things. 1,000 such small little offerings for Krishna. Yeah? And if you do 1,000 little things for Krishna, you can have a box and save every day one rent for, at the end of the month, you give it to the temple. Can we do?
Yes.
Maybe even 5 rent every day. Good. Then we can give it. It's possible. Small thing. But if we do many, many such small things, in the end, we begin to notice our whole life begins to focus on Krishna, and little by little, our life changes. So, in other words, to make the change, it's not so dramatic. It's about putting many small things in place. That service for Krishna begins to enter everywhere in our life. And service, you can do incidental service sometimes, or you just do steady service every day. Say, I do this service every day. And the more you make part of that, my everyday service, you know, you can chant every day a chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verses and Sanskrit. It's not so so difficult. I like the last evening shift because I'm a little flexible. But so I will not go on too long because tomorrow we have another day, but a little more. There's one more question here, and I'll make my point. So by doing that service, we surrender a little, then we put steady service in place, and little by little our own life changes. And that just makes us a servant instead of a master. Then humility becomes easy. It's an ongoing issue. It's a lifetime challenge. And at the end of life, we're falling short in mercy, falling short in humility, we pray for mercy. My dear Lord, I know I'm not qualified, but somehow or other, please accept me. Somehow or other, take me back. That prayer you have at the end of your life.
This is very small. How does one try to overcome obstacles that we place in our own path, whatever they may be? Well, the nature of the material world is everything has strings attached to it. That whatever material thing you get involved with, it has other things attached to it. Nice car, nice build, right? You know, nice repairs. It's like, you know, yeah, you drive, you know, a Toyota in the garage, or you drive a Mercedes in the garage. It's just a little different in terms of maintenance and so on. Right? You know, so everything, nothing comes alone. Everything needs a lot of other activity to support it, everything. So that's the nature of material life. And in that way, we accept some things that we really want, but these things, they bring many other things with them, and before we know it, we have a life full of obstacles. Sometimes even the things we wanted themselves became obstacles also. We realize after some time. So like that, what to do? So in this way, we create a life of entanglement.
What to do then?
Then it's time for, when we start to feel that we have created, make our life too complicated and created too many obstacles in our life, then time to get a little renounced.
Yeah.
Then you simplify. Then it's time to simplify. Say, well, it's just like my father bought a big house. Funny enough, we always had a house, a family with three children, so we always had a house where each child had his own room, and there was a guest room as well. So the house seemed to be okay, you know, in a sense. Nice house, nothing wrong with it. But my father wanted something bigger, so then he got something bigger. Funny enough, within 6 months, both my sister and myself moved out of the house, and only my younger brother still remained. And then they had all these rooms, you know. So then what to do with it? Then he had like a study room, he had a dressing room, the dog had its own room, and like that, you know, you had to find purposes for all these rooms, right? And, yeah, I don't want to criticize my father, but somehow it was funny the way it went, you know. And I guess he had a different idea. Then it really went. He thought we were going to stay at home for a long, long time. And that house became the biggest obstacle, actually. And, you know, at one point you have to say, like, well, do we need all this space? Maybe we don't. Let's just keep it a little more simple.
Sorry. I'm going to stop in a few minutes. Some people start to get sleepy because they're tired from a long day.
So, I think renunciation is a natural feature which helps us in simplifying our life, which will also help us in focusing on the things that are important, you know, in ourselves. See, when you're so busy with so many external things, then you have no time for internal life. So let me speak about the quality of humility. You have no time for that. Humility, you know, I mean, give me a break, you know, I've got other things to do, you know. I mean, talk about something practical, please, you know. When we're too busy, there's no time for such things. So we want to simplify our lives. That will help to get more focus in spiritual life. I am sort of winding it up. But do you have a question on humility?
We are not dormant.
Dormant.
Yeah. So sometimes, you know, you work with people in the Brazilian environment. It's a difficult situation because they just don't realize the spiritual pride or fast they want to be. So they take advantage and ready to meet you.
Okay. I got it. Bhakti Tirthamaraj used to say, we're not doormen. Come here.
Not a doormat.
I'm sorry, it's just the music is very loud. Yes. Yes, in our relationship to the outside world, we may stand up and protect our self-interest. We do not need to let them take undue advantage of us. But on the other hand, amongst Vaishnavas, we are generally a bit more inclined to say, okay, I'll bow to the will of the Vaishnavas. Unless the will of the Vaishnava interferes with a higher order or a higher mission. Say I'm made responsible for this tent and someone says, no, we should not have a microphone in this tent, in the tent, then with the music, nobody will hear. So, sometimes for the sake of my service, and also, speak a little strong and say, no, we'll have the microphone. Then I may not be so pliable. But if it comes to personal life, if it's not my service, just my personal life, why would I defend myself so much? A materialist, okay, we will not let him take away Krishna's essence. But the devotees, like when the devotees start criticizing me, I'm not going to defend myself. You know, I'm not going to stand up, and if somebody wants to sort of say so many things about me, I'm not going to defend myself. Why would I waste my time with these things? Alright, then I'll be the doormat with the devotees. If they want to criticize me, go ahead. So if a materialist criticizes, maybe by criticizing me, you'll criticize the Hare Krishna movement. All right, then I'll stand up and say, look, you know, Hare Krishna makes a valuable contribution to the world. Therefore, how can you speak like this? I might stand up with strength. But, like if you want to criticize me, I'll be the doormat. No problem. I'm ready. Anytime. Of course, I know that you generally glorify the Vaishnavas. But your point is nice. I think it's mature and right. And I thank you for bringing it up. Anyway, this humility, it's not complicated if we try to be the instrument of Krishna. It's not difficult. How humility question is actually not a big question when we are trying to be the instrument of Krishna. Because when we see the interest of Krishna, and then we just act accordingly, and that's humble. The key to humility is to just be the instrument of Krishna. Okay, so I humbly thank you for being here. I will take your leave now, if you allow me to ask in such a topic. I have to ask permission. So if you give me permission, I will now go and have a little rest, and tomorrow we'll carry on. Thank you very much for being here, for all the service some of the devotees do for Ratiyachya. It is, once again, a wonderful festival where we all get a lot of mercy. So, that's very nice. Thank you.